Welcome to the Volatile Vet Radio Show, where finance meets fortitude, and the stock market isn't the only thing with battle scars. At Abshire Family Financial, we are vets in more ways than one, here to help you navigate the world of wealth, investments, and financial independence with the precision of a sniper and the patience of a drill sergeant on his first cup of coffee. We don't just talk strategy, we equip you with real knowledge designed to bring about success, which is why we give you real-world rubber meets the road examples every week as part of our retirement mission. We want you to happily retire, and RETIRE is an acronym that stands for retirement, estate, taxes, income, risk, and enjoyment. To accomplish all those areas, you need a plan that's not just about surviving, but built to last. So whether you're dodging market downturns, wrestling with retirement plans, or just trying to make sense of why your money disappears faster than your willpower in a donut shop, stick around. We're going to cut through the noise, drop some knowledge, and maybe have a little fun along the way. So ladies and gentlemen, lock and load, because financial freedom is the mission. And here on The Volatile Vet, we always adapt and overcome. At this time of year, I think a lot of us start thinking about our families, the purpose that we're after, what we're after, how we value our time here on this third rock from the sun. And a lot of times inwardly we start to reflect on the values and the things in life that we treasure. Sometimes we cut away those things that don't have as much meaning or don't have the same allure that they used to, and we start focusing on things that truly have some lasting value. And in that spirit, what I'd like to do today with you here on the Volatile Vet Radio Show is review the holistic approach that we have that encompasses that RETIRE acronym and focus on the estate and the legacy, but in a different way than you have probably heard before. That acronym, RETIRE, R is retirement, E is estate, T is taxes, I is income, R is risk management, so that the final E, enjoyment, can be more fully realized. When done comprehensively and holistically, the approach, which is captured in every compass report that we do, makes for a much more enjoyable retirement and a much more confident and clear outlook. So it's incredibly important that our retirement plans do indeed address each one of those. Now, that E in the acronym for estate planning is something that we talk about here on the show. And what conjures up in the mind is a will, a trust, advanced health care directives, and durable powers of attorney, and durable powers of attorney for financial and for health care. All of those things are legal documents, important documents. Who gets what and where, under what circumstances. And in all of that, the right legal documents are paramount. We do help with that. We have a nationwide network of estate planning attorneys at steeply discounted prices. If you want to talk about that, get those things done as part of your Compass report. The phone number is 775-899-2243, 775-899-2243. 2243, and you call, set up a visit. It is complimentary, and we see what might be needed for you in your situation. So again, the Compass report is the beginning step of that. The legal documents we can assist with putting in place, 775-899-2243. Yes, that is estate planning, but another part of that is the legacy planning. And I started to go into this a couple weeks ago, where over the next 20 years, we call this the Great Wealth Transfer. And I am going to review this here and set the table a little bit for our discussion. Because over the next 20 years, the amount of wealth that will transfer from baby boomers to younger generations is estimated to be $84 trillion. Now, give or take, what's a trillion here or there? That's the estimate. That's more than twice the amount of our astronomical debt. In fact, we share this a lot. What century was it, just as a brain teaser, what century was it 1 trillion seconds ago? Not minutes or hours, just seconds.
And the answer is 30,000 BC, 1 trillion seconds ago. We're talking about $84 trillion of wealth over the next 20 years transferring. The unfortunate thing is that many, many studies show that the younger generations, whether it's millennials, Gen X, Gen Z, etc., are simply not prepared for this great wealth transfer. They have no plan, or they have a very subpar plan. Their perspectives, their values are potentially a threat to the wealth that was created, a threat to preserving it. And here's the statistic that is incredibly just kind of mind-boggling if we sit here and think about it. This comes from the Williams Group. Roy Williams and Vic Pressier. Their research is summarized in a book they co-wrote called Preparing Heirs, in which they studied and analyzed hundreds of wealthy families, so not just one or two, and why wealth transfers succeed or fail. So here's what their findings show. 70% of wealth transfers fail. Now, fail is defined as the family loses control of assets or the wealth simply kind of poof out of thin air, just dissipates. 70%. That's what happens to 70%, 7 out of 10 of all wealth transfers. Here's some deeper insight. Of the failures, 60%, an overwhelming majority, were due to breakdown in trust and communication within the family. 25% was due to heirs being unprepared. 10% was due to lack of shared purpose or mission, and I suppose we could put that into the breakdown in trust and communication. So that bumps that up to about 70%. This was poignant that only 5 to 15% of the failures were due to technical issues like taxes, the right trust or the wrong trust, the wrong legal structure or the right one, or investment performance. That was it 5 to 15% of the time. 70% of wealth transfers failed, and 70% of the time they failed was because of lack of trust, lack of communication, lack of shared vision. Simply saying it succinctly, there is a generational clash in values that is important for everyone in the family to be aware of, younger and senior generations, and discuss. Let's talk about the generational divide that does exist. Every generation, boomers, Gen Z, Gen X, etc., they all view money and wealth and values through very different lenses. And that's not better or worse. One is not better or worse than the other. They are just different. For example, boomers grew up believing that you work hard, you do what you say you're going to do, you don't complain, you retire at 65, you pay off your house, you help your kids if you can, and you leave something behind. That is the mindset, and it came from a place of stability, predictability, a pension, affordable housing, careers at long, long careers at one job. See, money to boomers is linear. Work, save, retire, help, pass down. All right, fine. Let's talk about the Gen Xers. Generation X, they're kind of like America's middle child, the latchkey kid, I'll kind of refer to them as. The ones who invented stuff, kind of got to figure it out on their own. They had less guidance, more responsibility, higher college costs, rising interest rates, declining pensions, and parents who really didn't talk about money and were taught not to talk about money. They're cautious, independent, and resourceful, and they probably are the most financially stressed generation alive right now. I mean, they're taking care of kids and aging parents. They're building wealth and losing sleep. And they happen to be sandwiched between two very loud generations. That brings us to the millennials. And they have a different story. They grew up being told, go to college, get good grades, and everything will work itself out. Instead, they walked right into the 2008 crash, student loan debt, wage stagnation, the housing affordability crisis, the gig economy. And now, you know, inflation kind of feels like a side quest in a video game to them. Millennials coming there are skeptical of traditional financial advice. Not because they don't care. They do deeply. but because they feel the world promised them one thing and delivered something entirely different. Now, whether or not that's true is not the point. It is their deeply held perspective and closely guarded belief. Aligning your estate with your legacy plans is critical, and we do help with it. It's something our firm has a deep passion for, and it is part of retirement planning. So if you'd like some help, it is a free visit. It's free to talk, to explore together. 775-899-2243, or you can always visit us at volatilevet.com, just like it sounds, volatilevet.com, or just give us a ring, 775-899-2243. Now we come to Gen Z. This is the group that watched COVID, political chaos, layoffs, tech booms and busts, crypto roller coasters, climate anxiety, all the automation and AI, the rise of AI and artificial intelligence, jobs being replaced by AI at lightning speed. And they're asking questions that, frankly, boomers could never have contemplated as needing to have been asked. Never would they have dreamed of asking, should I buy a house or should I just buy land in the metaverse? Should I invest in a 401k or should I put that money toward a YouTube channel? Do I really want a 9-to-5 kind of life? Or should I just go buy a Sprinter van and become a nomad influencer and make a ton of money that way, like I know 30 of my friends are doing? This is their reality. And so, when we put all four of those generations together at the same table to discuss wealth, here's what happens. Boomers talk about discipline. Gen X talks about responsibility. Millennials talk about survival. And Gen Z, well, they talk about flexibility. Different worlds, but the same family. Incredibly different perspectives and value systems. So now, if I can, let me circle back to that staggering statistic that 70% of wealth transfers fail, meaning only 3 in 10 succeed. Why do those 3 succeed? Here's what the evidence shows. There is a plethora of advisory firm and industry research. There are several large industry studies, both, again, by advisors, think tanks, researchers, things like that. The Family Wealth Report says advisory firms ranked family meetings and regular communication as the most effective wealth transfer retention strategy for keeping relationships and wealth across generations. They found that 89% of high net worth advisory practices find conducting family meetings and maintaining a regular cadence of communication is a key best practice for the successful wealth transfer. BlackRock, they drew on the same research, and they noted that advisors to high net worth families rate family meetings as the number one strategy for intergenerational wealth transfer planning. Isn't that just a little surprising? You mean it's not this fancy asset protection kind of trust? It's not offshore planning. It's not freeze partnerships and family limited partnerships. The number one wealth transfer tool is family meetings. It's not lab science, but it is large real world judgment and discernment by firms that advise the highest net worth families on the planet. And this is what they find. Fidelity did a study called The Great Wealth Transfer. And they as well found what similarly others have found, that 70% of parents do have some kind of will or estate plan, but 68% have not shared inheritance details with their kids. They skip the conversation and wealth transfers fail. The Rockefellers are kind of a classic meeting here, a classic example. They now have wealth into the seventh generation. The seventh. They meet at least twice a year with all living descendants. And many times those family gatherings are 100 members or more. What do they discuss? Family mission, family values, and philanthropy. Everyone who observes this credits this ongoing family governance and communication, the meetings, the missions, all the statements, as the key reason their wealth and unity have survived. It's not because of the wise investments. It's not because of fancy estate and legacy planning. The examples of failure of wealthy families with their wealth dissipating are too numerous to share. Why is communication so powerful? Because, guys, money is emotional. Money is part of identity. Money is part of security. Money is part of legacy. And when you don't talk about those things, assumptions fill the vacuum. And something I'd like you to hear loud and clear from the show today, if you don't define expectations clearly, someone else will define them emotionally. Open communication with family replaces confusion with clarity, suspicion with trust, and uncertainty with direction. I think, you know, if we come here to what is the anatomy of a family meeting, this is somewhere we're going because, yes, estate and legacy planning are indeed part of a Compass report. It's something we help clients do at the firm at Abshire Family Financial, is to host family meetings, but many people haven't done them. So what does one comprise? This really is going to become the heart of the show because most families have never held a family meeting with us. They don't know how. They don't know what to say. You don't even know what to expect. Here's what I hope is a simple but dynamic and living or expandable kind of template. So who should be invited? Parents, family leaders, adult children, spouses of children. That's optional, but certainly beneficial. Grandchildren or just dependent children. Maybe over 12 to 15 years of age, depending on how you feel about it and depending on maturity. And in some cases, your advisors, attorneys, some kind of neutral facilitator that you trust. Everyone who will be impacted and is mature enough to grasp at least some of what's going on should be informed and be invited to be informed at an appropriate level. Now, where should it happen? This doesn't need to be fancy, but it can be. I would pick a comfortable, neutral environment where people are not rushed, where it is comfortable, where guards are down. The living room and the dining room table are obvious choices, but so could a cabin be, so could a little retreat, a nice getaway, a private room at a restaurant. You can even do a Zoom meeting if your family is rather scattered. It doesn't have to be a big ordeal. I certainly think it can be if you want it to be. It'd be fun to all go away together, a family reunion somewhere, and have a meeting as well. But one real piece of advice, don't do this right after Thanksgiving or Christmas. Emotions plus a lot of extra pumpkin pie are usually not ideal for a family meeting. How long should it be? So again, it doesn't have to be a multi-day retreat or anything like that. The first meeting might be 60 to 90 minutes, because it can be focused. It may go several hours depending on people's inputs, their level of enthusiasm, but it doesn't have to be. The recurring meetings, once a framework is established, goals are established, mission of the family is established, ongoing meetings can be 30 to 60 minutes. It's a fairly casual conversation once it happens, and once that ball starts to get going, it becomes more familiar and less awkward. How about the agenda? You know, welcome. Here we go, right? 5 minutes, a welcome and purpose, right? We want everyone to understand our family values, our wishes, how to carry out our legacy. We want everyone's input for an open discussion. So that's the intro. Point number two, maybe 10 minutes, a family values discussion. You might ask things like, what values do we want our family to be known for? What does legacy mean to each of us? Understanding the generational divide and different ways of interpreting things. So make it so everyone can contribute. And what do we want to preserve? This is not only money. We're asking about beliefs, perspectives, the cultural assets, the family assets, the intellectual assets. See how critical that can be and how fun that can be. So that might be a 10 minutes. The next one is financial philosophy. This could be 10 minutes. Things like savings, giving, avoiding debt, educational goals, how the family views risk, under what circumstances do we like risk, do we avoid risk, what things do, what things do we not do, because they don't align with our values or philosophy. All right. And so we do talk about the financial directly. The next part might be an overview, and it can be high level, of what the estate plan is for the senior generations of the family. Now, if you don't want to discuss specific numbers, you do not have to. But this is where some of the brass tacks need to be clarified. Who is the executor? You're saying this in front of everyone. Or the survivor trustees? Where are documents kept? How are decisions made and will be made? How will assets be handled? What are the long-term care wishes, the charitable goals? Just talking about this for a few minutes in front of everyone, again, replaces suspicion with trust, darkness with light, misunderstanding with clarity. And then you can have an open Q&A for 10 to 15 minutes. Let the kids ask questions. Let the adult children ask questions. Allow concerns to come up. It's okay. Because now you have the time and the environment to handle misunderstandings in the present, not later, to nip them in the bud instead of letting them fester. And make an open offer that if ever there is confusion or a question, this is not a topic that is under lock and key. If any member has a question, bring it up. It doesn't have to necessarily be an entire new family meeting. It can be a grandchild calling a grandparent and saying, I didn't understand this part. It can be an adult child calling their parents. Why do you feel this way about this? And then once that conversation happens, to remunerate or reiterate it out through an email is a simple thing to do. You see the maturity, and yet so simple, it doesn't have to be awkward, but it might be getting going. So then after Q&A, we have next steps in an annual planning. When are we going to meeting again? Where will it be? Are we going to go to a different place next time, have some fun as well, make a family reunion out of it? Who's going to handle the tasks, right? I know in my family, there are people who handle event planning better than others, those who are grounded from it and those who are allowed to do it. And then end with something positive, whether it's dinner together, making an ice cream run, some funny story, or everyone's laughing, which usually ends up me being made fun of for a minute, and that's just fine. Leave with a connection, not with anxiety. All right. Okay. So that is kind of an outline. And if you can't tell, we have done these. We often are honored and happy to get the family going and started on this conversation. And many times we continue to attend. Sometimes we don't. That's okay. But what I want to share with you, what I just did share with you, gives you a very high, high likelihood of family wealth surviving, if that is your goal, a legacy surviving. And it's not just the family assets, it's the intellectual, the cultural, the civic, all of those things, the perspectives, beliefs, and know-how, the skills and knowledge and wisdom that is also on the table to be preserved when you do this, rather than simply the money. Though that, yes, is indeed part of it and an important piece. So I'm sharing this with you in the hopes that it moves some of you, especially at this time of year where we turn inward toward our families. We think about the things that really matter to us and the impact we're making in this world amongst those we love and care for the most. The phone number, if you'd like to talk about this, get guidance on it, get a checklist of what to do, a structure. And if you need help with the estate planning documents like trusts, wills, advanced healthcare directives, and things like that, all of that is analyzed in a Compass report. This is one part of the entire retirement planning process. But I'd be very willing to bet you haven't heard a discussion like this before, because so many advisors are just focused on the allocation model, what your statement looks like, what your rate of return is. Ladies and gentlemen, hear me loud and clear. We do all of that. We do the retirement tax planning, the wealth management. Yes, we do all of that. But something we believe strongly is overlooked, and a big reason why wealth does not survive, is a failure by advisors to do true legacy planning. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we are talking about. So if you'd like to visit with us, we'd like to visit with you. It's free to talk and explore together. So here is the phone number, 775-899-2243. It's 775-899-2243. You can always visit us at volatilevet.com. You can see our schedule right there, set up your own free visit, read a little bit more about the Compass Report, how it might impact you. And every Compass Report is different. Some are more comprehensive, some are more streamlined. It depends on your specific needs. 775-899-2243. As we wrap up this segment, we're going to come back in the second half of the show. We are going to have numbers, case studies, the very common thing that we do is showing a before and after picture so you can see with real numbers, rubber meets the road examples, how the work that we do, the scenarios we see commonly, how we can potentially make a massive impact for the clients that we serve. And I will say this, though we don't choose to work with everyone who comes to see us, you still leave better than you came in. You still leave with a full comprehensive Compass Report that shows you, in plain English, the steps you should consider taking, the potential outcomes from those action steps compared to what your current path outlook might be, and the differences that the Compass Report often shares are fairly staggering. So again, though we don't choose to work with everyone, you are still impacted for good, and those that we do choose to work with become family. 775-899-2243, 775-899-2243, or volatilevet.com. We will indeed get into the more traditional style of the show here in the next half, but I hope you have found this detailed discussion on family meetings critical, because it is the reason why family legacies either continue or dissipate into nothingness. 775-899-2243. Hang around. We'll be right back. Thanks for hanging out with us. This is the Volatile Vet Radio Show. Maybe you've been listening to the first half of the show all about legacy planning, wealth preservation into multi-generational wealth, and you've heard us talk about all the family meetings and kind of might be sitting there thinking to yourself, yeah, this is cool. It's great. We even went through a sample family meeting and outlined things like that. And I know it's a little bit over the air here, but let me capstone that a little bit with common objections that we may hear a lot and that you might be having. And I'm going to cover four of them. I know this can be a little bit awkward to start. Hey, everybody, we're going to have a family meeting where we talk about our family values and family wealth and how to preserve it into a legacy, understanding that financial aspects are only part of it, and that there are a lot of other aspects to it as well, the wisdom, the know-how, the skills, the cherished values, and what makes you you, what makes your family unique, and identifying it, that family identity and preserving that is also part of what we're talking about. But here we go. The objections we hear, number one, I don't want my kids to know how much we have. I get it. This is probably the most common objection that we hear to family meetings. No one is saying you have to share that. You don't have to share numbers, but do share structure, share intention, share roles and responsibility, not resources. Don't let that be a real obstacle to having a very productive family meeting, because not only is wealth preserved, what I'm really talking about is family unity. That is the real asset that can be preserved for many generations. All right, so I don't want my kids to know how much we have is not a real thing. Just don't talk about it. Someone's going to know the trust and all that. I mean, eventually, yes, fine. But it doesn't matter how much you have or don't have if the right structure is in place, if the right intentions are communicated, and if roles and responsibilities are clearly shared, then it doesn't matter. Number two objection we hear a lot. I'm worried this is going to start a fight. You could kind of just see it. It sounds like the beginning to a movie, right? Hey, we're going to have a family meeting. And you can, next thing you know, people are pronouncing curses, disowning each other, that kind of thing. No. Talking now is what does prevent that from happening later. Uncertainty is what creates conflict. The family meeting done right with the right clarity, the right communication, creates harmony. And that's important to preserve. Objection number three, it's too early. Guys, listen to me. If your kids are old enough to have an opinion, especially if they're old enough to vote, especially then, they are old enough for high-level communication and conversation around values. So for me, in our family, anyone who's 12 years old or higher is invited on some level to be part of major family meetings and major family planning, multi-generational planning. Think of the example it shares for them to be involved. It is not too early. Number four, or let me go back to that. Maybe you think, well, I'm only 50 years old. It's too early. No. This is something for when I'm 70, right? No. Start now. If you are the instigator to drag your parents, who might be 75 plus, into the fold of this concept and idea, do it. You can do it and take the bull by the horns. Number four, we've never done this before. All right, well, belt and suspenders, big boy, and let's go. Put on your big boy pants. It's time. Every tradition starts with one first step. Yes, there are probably other objections that you can come up with and things that we hear often as well, but these four things are what we hear most commonly. I don't want my kids to know how much we have. I'm worried this will start a fight. It's just too early. And we've never done this before. As you can plainly see, there are ways around each of those objections. Let me tell you that the benefits outweigh the objections and why this matters more than you think. Here's what families that do hold regular meetings experience. They experience, number one, reduced stress and confusion. Everyone knows the plan. Number two, stronger family unity and harmony. You're building something together, not hiding things from each other. Number three, better money decisions by kids and grandkids. In other words, this opens the door for mentorship and learning and growth. It opens the door for family members to talk about mistakes that they wish they could go back and do and to teach a younger generation. It's an open forum for generations that are young and still up and coming to talk about the things they're worried about, the things they'd like to do, and seek counsel. This one element, this one benefit here, number three, is so profound in creating habits that are productive and will pay dividends to your kids and future generations that it cannot be overstated. Number four, dramatically higher likelihood the family wealth survives generations. Families who talk preserve wealth. Families who stay silent lose it. All the studies, whether anecdotal or from academic research, they all tell the same thing. Number five, you create a shared mission that outlives you. The greatest inheritance is not money. It's stewardship, wisdom, and identity. There is something many years ago that I really delved into, and it's something called the wealth habit. And it was the concept that wealth is not large financial resources necessarily, right? I mean, we talk about it like that all the time. And of course, that's not a wrong way to say it. But rather, the concept of something called the wealth habit was that large financial resources are the natural consequence or result of being wealth. In other words, there are habits and principles, character traits that naturally foster an environment for wealth to be created and preserved. And the corollary is true. There are habits that are destructive and prohibitive, viewpoints and perspectives that are destructive and prohibitive from wealth being created and preserved. So the interesting thing here and how it lines up with number five, that you can create a shared mission that outlives you, and the concept that the greatest inheritance is not money, but rather the other assets, the intellectual assets, the value assets, stewardship, wisdom, identity, those kinds of things. When those things are clearly identified, lived by, professed, and internalized, guess what naturally happens to the wealth? It is created and preserved. It's not a fight, it's a natural consequence when those things are in your life. So not to become, you know, too out there with you, but there are some laws of money. There are laws of wealth. And one of them is that openness, transparency, honesty, good communication foster an environment where wealth can not only be created, but preserved and multiplied. Do you see how true estate planning can be so much more than just a will and a trust and the healthcare directives and the durable powers of attorney for financial? All those things are critical. We help with them. We want to help with them. When you get your compass report done, a lot of that comes out. And yes, those instruments are very important from a legal perspective. But the bigger perspective of estate planning for us gets into the legacy planning. How can we preserve the wealth in all of its meanings as long as possible? If you would like help in running your first family meeting, if you would like just an outline of how to do it, if you'd like to talk about estate and legacy planning and how we as a firm at Abshire Family Financial often help and facilitate that, we invite you just to give us a call. Set up a free visit. 775-899-2243. 775-899-2243. Or visit us at volatilevet.com. Now, part of the analyses that we do for clients often do include a discussion on tax planning in retirement. Now, this is different than tax preparation. I'm shifting gears on you here and going to do a case study with something called the tax scorecard. There is a lot of buzz about whether or not it makes sense to convert to a Roth IRA or to a life insurance retirement plan. Both of those vehicles fall into that tax-free column. And we talk about the tax columns a lot: taxable, tax deferred or tax procrastination, and tax-free or tax advantage. Those are the three columns. And while we're not going to go through them today, you can go back and find our past shows called Tax Diversification and the tax columns on Spotify or Apple podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just look for that show, Tax Diversification and the tax columns. But what I want to do today is show you a little bit here in the time we have left, the difference in total retirement taxation from that lens. And there are other ways to look at this, but to convert or not to convert, should I convert or should I not? There, simply said, are a lot of things that go into that decision. And one of them is to compare against the dogma of just delay, delay, delay on taxes, procrastinate, procrastinate as long as you can, because that will end up being better. It has been ingrained in so many people that tax deferral is the answer. And while that can be a good accumulation tool, when it comes time to retirement, it is interesting how quickly the tables turn and the long built up tax procrastinated type of account, an IRA or 401k, suddenly is a little bit scary to use. And you start to see just how tax hostile those accounts become when you do. Because now those built up, that pent up taxation that has been procrastinated for so long will come due. It will come due as you need the money and withdraw the money, or as the IRS forces you to use some of the money under RMDs. There are all kinds of collateral taxation damage that qualified accounts, a qualified account is an IRA, 401k, 403b, 457, TSP, SEP, or simple IRA, these kinds of things. I'm going to apply that term to anything that is pre-tax. One of the things that happens when you accept the IRS's offer to invest pre-tax into their Section 401 paragraph K plan or any of the cousins of it is that you give up certain things. Number one, you give up the ability to have preferential lower long-term capital gains treatment on your gains. They're going to be taxed at ordinary income as if they were short-term gains. Number two, the distributions that come out of the withdrawals that come out of those accounts later on when you use them go a long way in creating unnecessary or voluntary taxation on your Social Security. It also goes a long way in creating extra surcharges on your Medicare premiums, something called IRMA surcharges. And surcharge is just another name for tax, guys. Don't let anyone fool you. IRMA is I-R-M-A-A. It stands for Income Related Monthly Adjustment Amount. There are certain types of income that cause an adjustment on the amount of Medicare premium you are paying. Qualified accounts always count toward that calculus. What doesn't count toward those things are Roth IRAs and life insurance retirement plans. Those are the only two retirement tools that do not trigger that. So what I'm going to do is compare against having an IRA or 401k, a large qualified account in this case, versus converting that over a 7-year period. Now, this isn't going to be your example or your situation precisely. That's okay. I want you to pay attention to the concept and see some of the planning principles that, you know, that the firm employs on occasion, when appropriate, to save people hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in total taxes throughout retirement. This is going to be an example of something called the tax scorecard. It is part of a Compass report, and you can get yours done totally complimentary by calling and setting up a free visit. 775-899-2243. 775-899-2243. Or visit volatilevet.com. Okay, let's say that you have about $1.7 million in a 401k or IRA. Now, maybe you have $1 million or $500,000. Fine, you can extrapolate up or down. So $1.7 million, 64 years old. RMDs are a factor, but what we'd like to do is starting at age 70 in this case, start taking out 5% a year from the account. All right, cool. We think 7.5% is fairly modest, nothing objectionable as far as an average rate of return. And what we're going to also say is currently there's a 20% effective tax rate, but somewhere around the 8th year, we're going to model that increasing modestly to 24% as an effective rate. Is that entirely conceivable and foreseeable? You bet it is. In fact, that would, going from 20 to 24%, move the tax situation back to historical averages. That's all that we're doing here as a model. Okay, so $1.7 million, 64 years old, going to take 5% a year starting at age 70. We're going to plan through age 95. We have Social Security starting at age 70 of $58,000 a year. Married filing status is married, and we're going to call the COLA about 1.5% a year. Let's model that. We're also going to look at Irma and how that has affected the surcharges on Medicare premiums, and we'll convert over a 7-year period. Now, something else that we're going to use is a unique product or account that gives us a 15% bonus on the converted amounts. And that's going to help us recapture a decent amount of the taxes paid on the conversions. Really neat. Watch this. Let's run it. And the first thing we'll do is assume that the $1.7 million IRA grows at 7.5, et cetera, just stays as it is. We don't do any conversions. Here's what that might look like. We're going to take distribution starting at age 70. Remember, 5% a year. That would create $1,366,000 in taxes through age 95. When the heirs eventually inherit the remaining IRA, whether they pay it all at once or stretch it out, whatever, the taxes should be somewhere in the $667,000 range, give or take. So there's another $600,000 to $700,000 of taxes on top of the 1.3 and change already. Social Security taxes. Remember how I said qualified accounts are guilty of creating unnecessary voluntary taxes on Social Security? Often this is collateral damage of qualified accounts. It creates nearly $371,000 of voluntary tax on Social Security in this case. Irma surcharges. The qualified account also triggers that Irma tax or surcharge on Medicare premiums. That is an additional $117,000, almost $118,000 in voluntary taxation or collateral damage. Altogether, if this were the scenario and the IRA stayed as it is, you'd be looking at more than $2.5 million in total retirement taxes on that $1.7 million current IRA. This is part of a Compass report. It's part of the other side of the equation that no one has probably ever shown you to this pre-tax, the pre-tax equation, right? No one ever talks about the other side in quantifying the taxes and the collateral damage that can and often does come to pass. In fact, the conversation goes something like this with a CPA when you go to get your taxes in and they say that you have this much due in on your Social Security taxation and you have this much due in Irma surcharges. And you say, what in the world is that? I never knew about that. And the CPA kind of shrugs their shoulders because often they're like, well, I don't know. That's just what the software says. Huh. And you're left sitting there saying, if I had known, I could have done something about it. We are telling you, you can do something about it. Take a step. Set up a free visit. 775-899-2243. You cannot afford to have a micro view of tax planning, especially in retirement. A micro view is to say only concerned about what the current year looks like. Maximize the tax savings in the current year. No, you must have a macro view. You must look at the other side of the pre-tax equation for your situation. This is called the tax scorecard. We're going to get to a solution. Don't worry. It is part of a Compass report. We always do a Compass report complimentary. Give us a call and set up a free visit. And let's see what might make sense for you. What does the X-ray show for you? 775-899-2243. 775-899-2243. Or set up your own visit right at volatilevet.com. Let me rewind just a little bit. 1.7 million, we're 64 years old. We just went through the scenario of how it created, if you left the IRA as it were, just taking 5% a year starting at age 70, $2.5 million in total taxation. You got taxes on the withdrawals. The heirs, you see an IRA, is the or any kind of qualified pre-tax account is perhaps the worst created account ever for inheritance planning, for legacy planning. It is absolutely inefficient, and it creates another $600,000 to $700,000 in taxes for the heirs. The Social Security taxes, $370,000. The IRMA surcharges, $118,000 almost. Much of that is completely avoidable with proper planning. But if you swallow the Kool-Aid of just delay, and now what you should be hearing in your head is procrastinate the day of taxation, it could be a lot more painful than it needs to be. 775-899-2243. All right, let's get to a solution. We're rewinding now with the tax scorecard. We have this $1.7 million IRA. We're 64 years old. We want to see what would happen if we converted this, say, over a seven-year period. We manage the taxes along the way, try to minimize it, the whole thing. If we did that, if we converted over the next 7 years, do Roth IRAs have RMDs of any kind? No. Even if they did, do we have to pay taxes on any kind of withdrawal from a Roth IRA so long as we have satisfied the five-year rule, which we have here? No. So remember, we wanted to take out 5% a year by age 70. No problem. No taxes whatsoever. When heirs inherit a Roth IRA, or a life insurance retirement plan for that matter, do they have inheritance taxes to pay, like they do with the IRA? No, they do not. So far we've gone from $1.366,000 and change on taxes on distributions to zero. We've gone from inheritance taxes of $676,000 to zero. Social Security taxes were almost $371,000 if we left the IRA as it is. And you're recalling that the IRA causes a lot of additional collateral damage or voluntary taxation on things like Social Security. So it was $371,000. Now that we've converted over 7 years, in this case, to a Roth, what are our total Social Security taxes? Just over $21,000. That is a reduction of $350,000. In those voluntary, unnecessary taxes on Social Security, talk about a windfall because of proper planning. The IRMA surcharges, which is a tax on Medicare premiums, was nearly $118,000. Now, after the conversion, it is just over $23,000. Massive reduction. Where do we have some tax here? Well, on the conversion, we do have some tax. If we're converting this $1.7 million IRA over 7 years, we have about $485,000, give or take, in conversion taxes. The total tax bill over the entire retirement, right, from age 64 through age 95, in this case, is about $530,000, compared to $2,531,000 if we did not convert. Taxes on withdrawals, $1.3 million to zero. Taxes to the heirs, nearly $700,000 to zero. Taxes on Social Security, $371,000 down to $21,000. IRMA surcharges from about $118,000 down to $23,000. This is a reduction of 79% of total retirement taxes, over $2 million of total taxes saved, which is like having an additional $62,560 per year throughout retirement. That is an example of the tax scorecard. That is an example of wise planning. Are there other considerations to take into account? Yes, there are. But this is a great way to visualize and see for once the other side of that pre-tax equation. Let me ask you this. I said there was a bonus of 15%, did I not? If we applied that bonus to help recapture a good chunk of the taxes upon conversion. Now the total taxes drop from $530,000 to only $262,000. Yes, that is real. Yes, it's used every day. Let's get your Compass report done. It's complimentary. The phone number is 775-899-2243. 775-899-2243 or volatilevet.com. We hope you've enjoyed this show just as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. We'll see you next time.
All matters discussed during the show are for informational purposes only. Each individual situation may vary, and the opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. Materials presented are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representations can be made as to its accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our qualified representatives prior to implementation. We are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration, the Federal Medicare Program, or any other government agency. Calling this number will direct you to a licensed representative.